The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Live from Joshua Neosmith's kitchen, where we always have meals fully prepared for any guest that might be hungry, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it now. Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy presents Doctor Who Podshock, number 176. Now, we're picking up from last time where we left off on our live show discussing Doctor Who, The End of Time, Part 1. So, this is Part 2 of our review of Part 1, if that all makes sense to you. Hosting with me was James Norton, although he did have to leave mid-show, so you won't be hearing from him in this part of this episode, and none other than Dave A.C. Cooper, also in the UK. Ken Deep makes a surprise appearance at the very last minute, so stay tuned for that. This is Louis Trapani. Now, if you haven't heard part one of our review, please go back and listen to Doctor Who Podshock number 175. James, Dave, and myself give our take on The End of Time part one. We also hear from Darth Skeptical giving his points on the episode. So now we rejoin our live show, taking live feedback from callers, as opposed to dead feedback. So we're taking live feedback from our callers, and I believe the first one up in this episode is Syl, an alien we first saw in the Sixth Doctor's Era. Now we'll go to Russell in the queue, and let's hope it's not Syl. Hello, Russell.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, it's Syl.
I'm just Kurt. Apparently Canada's cursed. The Canadians call him sound like crap, and yes, it's maybe camp country.
Russell, what are we going to do with you? I'm just going to be calling you Syl. It's Russ Syl. Syl, emphasis on Syl.
I just need to come on the show regularly without the talk show thing and just prove to people I sound normal. Or just listen to my show. I don't sound like this.
I should hope not, unless you call your unless it's, you know, well, it can't be rambling with Syl. It has to be Syl, I don't know. So, I can't think of something that goes with Syl.
Kill the torrents.
nothing is running, folks. I don't know why. I used to sound normal on the talk show, but life is fun.
Anarchy has broken out. The servants have gone mad. And good riddance, I say. All they do is eat you out of house and home.
So what
anyway,
did Syl think of The End of Time Part 1?
Okay, I thought it was a very interesting episode. Let me give you my take on this. I felt this was a lot like Army of Ghosts, the first Cybermen story that came back, and that it was a lot of build-up, and hopefully the second one will be better. Because, you know, I felt kind of lukewarm about this episode. There were really good parts. I mean, everybody agrees that the point with Wilson, the doctor, in the cafe, that was heartbreaking. I gotta say, that's probably the most gut-ripping part of the whole episode, where he just talks about the lost potential of Donna. Really. And it was nice to see Bernard Krivet in the top credits. I thought that was really great. It kind of proved to me that, no, Donna will not be a major part of this story. I thought, for a moment, the early part of the episode, she wasn't going to be in at all. They'd just write her out. Oh, no, Donna's gone on holidays. Won't be around. That kind of stuff. I really thought we were going to have a Donna this episode, but I guess you just can't, really. Overall, I agree with you guys that the Master, him coming back the way he did, was too magic-y and not enough explanation. It was really, you know, it was too magic-y. I mean, it's like, okay, so she threw her potion in, and now he has blonde hair and energy powers. Great, that's okay. and then you just go with it. The ending, it was funny throughout the whole episode. I kept hearing that background voice going, "What? Who's that actor? That voice sounds familiar." And then the big reveal at the end was like, "Oh, it's Timothy Dalton." And I had no idea that Time Lords were coming back, so that's great. I'm really looking forward to what it's going to be build up. I knew that ring would come into play eventually. That'd be a MacGuffin to bring the Master back. I just thought it'd be more scientific. You know, they extract a chunk of his DNA that got embedded in the ring, and then they reconstitute him that way.
Yeah. Did you recognize Brian Cox as well as the leader of the Ood?
No,
Brian Cox, who's been in X-Men and Bourne Identity and so on.
No, I didn't pick up on that, but I hope Timothy Dalton has a great part to play in the second part, because he can make a really good villain if they give him enough good lines. I think it's a good choice. If you want to have a Lord High, uber-powerful High Chancellor, yeah, give it to him, you know. I agree with that. I think they're playing it that the Master is a pawn of the Time Lords. I think this is all engineered by them. I think they wanted him back. So why tie them into the story? And I'm just not sure what this end of time is going to be. I'm still not sure what it is and what they're going to gain from it. You know, what's the big hoopla about ending time? Doesn't it just mess everything up?
It's one of those things that's often, you know, sometimes thrown about recently is, you know, this end of time or impending darkness. And I mean, what is end of time? I mean, what's after, if time ends, what's after time?
Yeah, and wiping out 6 billion people is only a sideshow this time.
Yeah, and this is an opening appetizer. I mean, it really kind of wonders, you know, where this is going to lead to. I mean, it's really an open. I mean, on its own, this episode wouldn't rate high. It really, it is. It's like you said, Lewis, it's the first half of a movie. You're going, okay, we've got a real lot of exposition, and really set up a big finish. Now let's get to the finish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those. It had its great moments. I mean, you know, I think John Simmons is great as a Master still, and nice to see him a little bit on the insaner side, considering he was so cool and calm the last time we saw him. And I think Wolf makes a good companion. It's kind of nice to see him in that role, more active. It's like him and Donna the Switch. Before, Donna was more the active person. He was in the background. They just changed roles, really, in a way. So, but I don't know what they're going to do with Donna. If she remembers, she's dead. So I don't know how you're going to do that, really. I'm not sure what the solution is to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that whole Master lasting thing at the end is far too long. I mean, it was like they're hammering it in the head. Okay, we get it. He's everybody. All right, stop showing him in everybody. Great. I think they could have cut that at least in half. We got the point really quickly.
Yeah, they might have overdone that.
Yeah, I think it's like pounding on the head. Okay, he's everybody. Terrific. Although, I didn't see that coming. Although, I saw the head shaking, I thought it was leading to that. But, yeah. I agree. It was a little too magical in some ways, and maybe it's just, you know, we need to explain it to the audience anymore, but a little would have been nice. I found it interesting, the confidential. He said he set up the ring as something for somebody else to use, and he never thought he'd be the one to do it, which is interesting. So, I think that's, he set himself up, really, in a way.
Yeah, well, we knew with that ending that there was going to be some sort of, you know, way out for the Master to return, you know, by leaving that ring there and being picked up, and we knew that that was going to be the key to his return somehow.
Yeah, and I'm just curious to see how this gets undone. That, to me, is the big cliffhanger. So, okay, he's done this. Where's the magic reverse button?
Well, where the Time Lords probably come in, you know, and let's hope it's, you know, I don't know. Yeah, obviously, there's going to be some reset of some sort, because obviously everyone's going to, the Earth's population isn't going to be left with the Master Race.
No. And I hope this is the Time Lords for a big baddie or a recurring part of this series with Matt Smith. I hope this isn't they just come back, and then we never hear from them again.
Yeah, well, I hope not as well. I mean, I always prefer the Doctor on the run from his people rather than being the last of his people. To me, it's more exciting that he's running from his own race than being the last of his own race, as far as the concept goes.
Yeah, and I feel if you're going to make this much effort to bring back this major part of the mythos, don't just bring it back and then say, oh, that happened, we're not going to use it anymore.
Well, one thing all this has sorted out is that, you know, they said there were rumors about a Doctor Who movie, and there's no Doctor Who movie. Well, it looks like we're getting a Doctor Who movie with this two-parter.
Yeah, this is probably, just like I said with Army of Ghosts, it's the most, we'll do this episode to set up this episode so we can have this finale episode.
Mm-hmm.
Some two-parters, like Family of Blood, the one-parter ends on its own, but this one doesn't. Not with that ending. I'm curious to see how it all plays out and how it all flows together. But I have high hopes. I really hope. And I hope it's not regeneration, a minute of Matt Smith, roll credits. I really hope they don't do that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No. You hope they don't do what?
They don't do a minute or regeneration, a minute or 2 seconds of Matt Smith, and then it's roll credits.
Yeah, well, most likely we're probably not going to see a lot of Matt Smith at the end of part two. I'm guessing.
And I also feel that there'll be more heartstrings pulled. I don't think RPG's done. You know, there'll be more gut-wrenching moments for the second one for sure.
Well, Russell T. Davies has warned everyone that you're going to need a box of tissues while watching this. So far, I didn't need it in part one. We'll see in part two. I just out of a coincidence, because it was the holiday. I was going to say yesterday, but it was the day before yesterday. I was watching the Next Doctor, and I thought the ending there was a bit emotional. But we'll see what happens in next week's episode. So far, I didn't need any tissues. Even in that cafe scene, it just there just wasn't enough. There was not enough character or meat and potatoes, if you will, of story.
Didn't link into anything, did it? Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was the only emotional moment, really, in the episode, because when everybody changed the master, you weren't invested enough in the characters to go, oh, well, that's a shame.
Yeah.
So I think that's the only really moment you tried to put over something. I'm curious to see how it ends. I mean, it's been an interesting run for David Tennant, and I mean, we're hoping for a good series ending, and we had a mixed bag with that in the years that have been
back. We'll see. We'll see next week.
I would only rate this a 3.5 out of 5.
Okay, very good.
Because of the last explanation.
All right. Well, thank you once again, Russell, and Syl as well.
All right, well, one day I'll get this cleared up. And assure all of my listeners, on my podcast, even though I had a bit of a cold lately, I don't sound like an intergalactic despot. I do sound normal on my show most times.
Otherwise, you can play the new Syl in the series, if they decide to bring Syl back.
Oh, sure. If I recreate this internet fluke, then sure.
You won't need a voice modulator. We'll just... record your dialogue through TalkShoe.
Right. it's special effects that only got intentional.
Thanks again, and happy have a happy new year.
You too. My best wishes to all the podcast listeners, and if you want to listen to my show, let's look for my show on the forums website of the Gallifreyan Embassy under other podcasts, and you'll see Ramble Russell there.
Great. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right. Cheers. All right, well, next in the queue is Charlie. Hello there.
Hello, Lewis.
Hi.
Hello, Dave.
Well, I think it's
Hi,
welcome
Charlie.
Back, right? You've been on before.
Yeah, I was on the Waters of Mars episode.
So welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me. Actually, I'm going to start off right off the bat. I have to give you some props, Lewis. Around, Obama's second press conference, his evening press conference, they were talking about healthcare, and he mentioned something about having a doctor following him around.
Oh yes,
all the time.
I remember that.
And then you on Twitter said, "Is Obama the master?" And I watched that the second time. Oh, Lewis is right.
I forgot about that. I'm so surprised you remembered that. Yeah, I tweeted that, and I completely forgot. Yes.
I didn't think about that until, you know, the second time I watched it. All right. So, yeah, I watched it. Small World. I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, it was very mixed. It felt to me like of all the Christmas films, it felt to me like the next Doctor. It was like, there's one story I like, and there's one story I don't, I like, and there's one story I don't really like, with
Star Trek Even Numbers.
Yeah, right. I there's this whole bit. I'm really interested in the Doctor story. And him, hooking up with Wilf, and Wilf's going on, and then we get this whole cult of the Master, the cult of sex, and then they get taken away very quickly, and then we get and then right after that we get Naismith and his daughter. Mm-hmm. His daughter, I know that the actress who played that was very creepy. She had this very creepy look every time she showed up. She had that kind of
They're both sort of creepy. I mean, no offense against the actor and actress, but they just come across kind of creepy. And
I was like, what do they want with this Master? And then
and it's never really fully explained who they are. Of course, he was the writer of that book, and then obviously he has tons of money that he can afford his own army. But we don't know how he got his money, or I mean, some of it doesn't. Everything doesn't need to be explained. But it's just maybe we'll learn more about him and why he's obsessed with his daughter so much, about having her live forever.
Maybe she's a very spoiled child.
Think so.
And it's Christmas, so.
Daddy, what did you get me for Christmas? Immortality.
I just like the fact, when he says the immortality gate, and the Master kind of laughs at him. I'm like, that's a stupid name. I can understand. I like to understand. And that's another question I have is whether or not the Master knew about it. This was his whole plan of the whole Master race thing, because he gets kidnapped, and then they show him this immortality gate, and then he goes through it. For me, it kind of like it seems like of a spur of a moment for the Master. He just you put a toy in front of a kid and see what he does with it, a new toy or something like that, and he goes wild and crazy. I like the bit I was talking about when Donna remembers. They show that little quick flashback, mm-hmm. like the little you see Davros, and we see the Spider Queen, and then we see Baby Adipose really quick. And I thought that was very like all this bleak stuff, and then the Adipose shows up. I might watch it, and I did like the bit with Timothy Dalton just appears out of nowhere. It felt very epic to me. It's like, oh, this is kind of like Lord of the Rings. Then the narrator shows up halfway through the episode.
Did you see the 1996 movie with Paul McGann?
The
opening of this reminded me very much of that. I was with the space scene, and instead of going to it's telling the story of the Master and the Daleks and imprisoned him and all that. It had echoes of that for me.
Another bit that reminded me of the TV movies when they find the two skeletons in the food van. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the bit where they find the security guards frozen solid
with that goo that the Master was spinning.
So I mean, at first, it was one of those things. It was hard to we had all those multiple endings. I think for the second time it worked better because I could take it in more, and I could take, we have a plan full of Masters, and the Time Lords return. Oh, it does work well with on repeats, and I'll probably watch it. I'll probably watch it again before I watch part two.
Yeah, I'm sure many will.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it needs that, yeah.
Yeah, it does. You want them glued together, so you have a fresh. I'll just say one more thing. I did like seeing Wilf. I was kind of worried about having Wilf. He has a loaded revolver in his because you see him take the gun out. And he checks it. There's bullets in there. He puts it. I'm like, wow, he's got a loaded gun underneath his bed. That's good. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and no secure location, just in an old
box.
But it's going to be important because when he's in that booth, he accidentally takes it out, and that's presumably just to remind the audience that he has it.
Yeah.
And I'll say one more thing about the mysterious lady in white. I said this on Colton, but I'll say it again. It reminded me of Rose in Turn Left, how she, and just Rose in general in Series 4, how she appeared on TV a couple times, and she appeared, you know, she appeared in the church briefly, and she doesn't make eye contact with Wilf. She just shows up, kind of, you know, glaring off and staring off in the space, and then disappears. So I thought, well, maybe it's a, you know, it's another Time Lord, maybe it's, you know, the White Guardian, maybe it's Chancellor Flavia, Romana. I also, and then later on, I thought maybe this is the offspring of Rose and the alternate Doctor from Journey's End. That's my
They're on Pete's World.
Yeah, Pete's World. The Pete's World alternate Doctor and Rose when we left them off at Darleek at Bad Wolf Bay from Journey's End. So that's it. The first time I watched it, I thought, you know, two and a half, and the second time I watched it, I liked it quite a bit more, and I probably bumped up to 3.5 Tardis Chromes.
Yeah, I liked it better the second time I watched it too. I'm purposely not, you know, giving it a rating only because I don't think it would be fair until I see both halves of it. But it would have been if I was forced to, maybe 2.5. Then I upped it to 3. You know, with the Gallifrey scene at the end, and watching it the second time around, I liked it a little bit better. So, but again, I'll hold off until next week and give an overall rating. All right. Well, thank you again, Charlie, and Happy New Year to you as well. And I hope you had having a good holiday season.
Yes. Thank you. Happy New Year to you too.
Thank you.
And to you, Charlie.
Oh, thank you.
We got one more clip from Dave, and then we got three left in the queue, and then after that, we'll call it a show. Sounds like a plan, right?
Yep.
She's still fighting for it even now. The doctor's on her.
Dad, what are you up to?
You. Get out of here. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. She can't see you. What if she remembers?
Go, let me too.
Oh, no, you don't.
Mom? Grand? Dad? What are you?
Hide
and seek. Stay right where you are.
You can't go with me.
Oh, you're not leaving me with her.
Dad.
Fair enough.
Mom, just you listen to me. I'm the minute. Get out of there. We must call the right now. Come back here.
Bigger on the inside.
Do you like it? I thought it'd be cleaner.
Cleaner? I could take you back home right now.
It meant it's as simple as that. It's a medical device to repair the body. It makes people better.
There's got to be more.
Pardon me for asking, but why is it so big?
Oh, good question. Why is it so big?
It doesn't just mend one person at a time.
That would be ridiculous.
It mends whole planets.
It does what?
Transmits the medical template across the entire population.
What?
Oh, you're gonna love this.
Where are you?
It's Mum and Sean. Something's wrong with them.
There's his face.
Wait a minute. I mean, what about you? Can't you see anything?
I can see them.
They're gonna become me. You can't ask. What is it?
It's like
something before. Doctor, you're starting to remember. What is it? What have you done, you monster?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking to me? Or to me? Or to me? To us.
Breaking news. I'm everyone. And everyone in the world is me.
I'm president.
President of the United States. Look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, come on.
Financial solution. Deleted.
The human race was always your favorite, Doctor. But now, there is no human race. There is only the Master Race.
And so it came to pass, on Christmas Day, that the human race did cease to exist. But even then, the Master had no concept of his greater role in events, for this was far more than humanity's end. This day was the day upon which the whole of creation would change forever. This was the day the Time Lords returned. For Gallifrey. For victory!
Ah, for Gallifrey, for victory, for the end of time itself, and for Tim Drury. Hello, Tim. Tim, did I catch you off guard there?
I don't know. Well, I can use the phrase that I've been saving up, and it's not come up in the discussion so far, because it's a very English phrase. We have a phrase in this country, Dave, don't we, called a curate's egg.
Good description.
And I've watched this one now about three or four times.
Before you go on, you're going to have to explain this for the non-UK people in the audience and myself.
Go on, Dave. Tell the non-UKers what a curate's egg is.
It's basically a mixed bag. I mean, that's the simplest way. It's a complete mixed bag of rubbish come brilliant come...
I'll use another phrase I found on one of the forums when I was having a quick look through a few hours ago. Someone said 75% good, 25% bad. And that's another way of putting it. But
sort of a mixed bag.
I've watched it about three or four times now with and without the commentary, and I'd urge everybody in the room and everybody listening to this show, listen to the commentary, because it will explain stuff. And you'll find out some important insights about the writing.
Yeah, I haven't heard the commentary.
But you shouldn't do it. I mean, every TV show on the TV can't say you can only understand this show
exactly
if you watch the commentary.
I think it was mostly understandable, but I would urge those people who've said they dislike it to do what me and Darth have done and sit down and watch it again, because there is much to love in there. I mean, the first few minutes in, that wonderful scene with Bernard Cribbins and David Tennant in the cafe, and I had a brief chat with one of my friends on IM, and she's trying to get into acting. She's a teenager, and she highlighted the highlights of it. And so there's stuff in there to love from everybody. And having now watched it three or four times, like some of the stories from RTD Zero that I've seen several times, I start to see the writing technique. And he started off at the beginning with little weird moments, like the woman showing up in the church, and he's gradually built and built and built to a really big weird moment, your cliffhanger. It was on the whole good, but I think I'd have to agree with that person that said 75%, 25%... Because there was stuff in it that annoyed me, like the whole stuff of the Master Race. I was like, yes, I get it. They do all this stuff, all these cutaways, and that bit must have gone on for about a minute. And I thought, yes, we get it. There's no need to blow all the budget on this one sequence. Timothy Dalton, though, he absolutely rocked, even if he did spit. I'm not keen on seeing people spit on TV. It was very interesting. I went through... various things, because I put my own show together really quickly, and I thought, oh, what can I get to put not just my opinions in it? And so I said on it, oh, well, this is 2009, let's see what people are saying on Twitter. And so I read out their Twitter names and what they said. And I don't know if it made it into the finished show, because I just went through Twitter quite quickly, but one of the comments that came up was, I'll let Christopher Eccleston get away with that kind of thing. I don't really want to see it from James Bond. And the way Uros Lynn had shot it only emphasized it, because it was his face in tight close-up, mm-hmm, against black. And so the lighting caught all the the spit coming out, isn't it? But no, what he actually said and the way he said it, this is obviously a sort of... well, Barusa's been a sort of nasty Time Lord, Lord President in the past, hasn't he?
Yeah, they all seem and, to have been so nasty at some point.
Well, you only have to go back to Trial of a Time Lord that was coming out on DVD box set just a few months back, and you look at the Doctor ranting at the Time Lords and saying how that's what it takes to be really, really corrupt, all this power that you've got. And so I have to admit that one of my big highlights, and it made me literally, and I'll repeat it now for you, do this. It was seeing all those Time Lords in a sort of shot a la when they did CGI and did loads of Daleks. Because to have loads of Daleks on screen is... that rocks. even if most of them are CGI. But to have loads of Time Lords on screen...
It reminded me that...
There's a power in that shot at the end, isn't there, Lou? Where they're there. And it's a bit like Star Wars,
isn't it?
Well,
that's what I was going to say. It reminded me of the Senate room on Coruscant.
Well, whenever I watch Doctor Who, I'm just reminded the fact that the thing with RTD is, unlike some people who make television, he definitely watches it. And so his inspirations are other things on television, other things in pop culture.
Sure.
And so that's why he makes very watchable television. And it was certainly watchable. I'm hoping we'll get an explanation as to who the lady in white is. My theory at the moment is she may be a guardian, because unlike the Time Lord, she didn't seem to be evil. So she can only really be one of two things, and I think she's either a guardian or she's a good Time Lord, because I'm saying Gallifrey's a big planet, they can't have all gone nasty. There might be like small levels of resistance and little nice ones around.
Well, she has the ability to sort of vanish or disappear very quickly, so...
Yeah, we could have that whole RTD favourite of... We've spent a week or so coming up with theories and writing stuff down and putting stuff in our blogs, and then we tune in on New Year's Day to watch part two, and he says... And that character's either not in it at all, or there's some entirely different explanation, but when we watch it, we go... Oh, yeah, yes, she could be that as well.
She may not even be there. She could just be in Will's head because no one else seems to be seeing her. So she may not physically be there at all. She just could be just in Will's head.
Well, I mean, the Guardians had that ability to appear to just one person, which is why there's this theory that she's a Guardian. But no, I think on the whole it rocked. I listened to it... this evening,
if it's the end of time, the Guardians would be interested in that.
Yeah, I had it on today on the BBC iPlayer in HD, and you've got to have good bandwidth for when you're streaming HD. I started getting error messages near the end. The iPlayer was going, "You need 3.5 megabits per second bandwidth," and I'm going, I'm paying my ISP for 10. I haven't had 10 since the beginning of the month, but everyone Christmas shops and goes on the internet for the sales, and it's pushed down my bandwidth, I think. Yes, but hopefully everything will get back to normal in the new year. But on the whole, it played very well, and I had headphones on, so I was able to hear Murray Gold's excellent music, and... let's hope he writes some new stuff for the Matt Smith era. Because now he's been writing for the Eccleston era and the David Tennant era. You noticed recurring themes, don't you? So if the Doctor has like a quiet character moment with a familiar character, a particular theme will be used. I mean, this isn't really a criticism because it is such excellent music. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit like, you know, how you'd watch an episode of Scooby-Doo and they'd always use the same stock music in Scooby-Doo and other Hanna-Barbera productions. It's a money-saving thing. I mean, music is expensive the way they do it in Doctor Who these days when you get a big orchestra and the guy's got to sit down for months and come up with ideas and write it. So, I mean, I can things like that I can forgive. But
well, unfortunately, Doctor Who does that with sound effects. A lot of the sound effects are standard sound effects that they pull out of the same bag all the time. And it's very rare that they come up with new sound effects. But, you know,
I would urge people to see it in HD because it's been shot to look really good in HD. And I watch, as it was trans. I don't have an HD broadcast service. I use the iPlayer and, as we say, other means. And was forced to use other means the other night because it wasn't on the iPlayer in HD quick enough for me. Come on, BBC. But no, I've watched it on my 32-inch telly in HD, and I've watched it on my new laptop and 15.6-inch monitor in HD, and it rocks in HD. So they'll get a few Blu-ray sales out of this, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And the Blu-ray I already have on order.
The last two specials early
next year.
HD as well.
And while I'm on the subject of these specials, I think they will watch very well when you have that Blu-ray or DVD box set, and we as fans will watch one today and then one tomorrow, or if you're Lou, you'll watch one this month and one next month.
Or if you're Darth, you watch the same one 10 times.
10 times over, but there'll be a sort of thing running throughout them, because at the end of the next Doctor, that woman says he will knock 4 times, and then in... I don't know if there is one in Planet of the Dead. Is there a nod to the future in Planet of the Dead? Oh, no, that was in Planet of the Dead. Yes, sorry. Yeah. But in Waters of Mars is all about the Doctor going, oh, I'm going to die soon. And so he's trying to save other people's lives to kind of, in some ways, I guess, take his mind off and escape his own death, sort of thinking, if I save these people's lives... Maybe I'll be all right, but he goes too far, and then we get this one, which it's kind of like I suspected it would be, because when they ran the first trailers for it, the Doctor had a line where he's telling it's the cafe scene where he's telling Wilf that he's going to die, and I thought, aha. So this is going to be a two-parter of the Doctor kind of running away from his own death. And I think we're in some parts of the story we do witness that, because he does spend the beginning of the story running after the Master, thinking, oh, yeah, well, if I can help the Master, that might help, and all that sort of thing. You've not asked anybody for ratings far.
Well,
so things have been quite...
You're not
certainly volunteered.
If you want to give
your
personal rating,
well, I'll stick my rating in, and I'll say 4 out of 5 TARDIS groans, because it's been a good watch, but as we say, a curate's egg. So there you go, folks, a new phrase for your...
Okay, so it's curate's
curate's egg. Like it's a priest, it's a church... phrase
I put
it comes
a link
from.
In for the definition.
Yes, you can look it up quickly on Wikipedia later.
Yeah, I'll do that later. Right now, we're hosting a show, but thank you.
Yeah, well, as I say, okay. Later.
All right, well, thank you so much,
we'll let,
Tim.
Let Romana in, let, have the word from Australia.
Yeah, all right. Well, have a happy new year, Tim, and well, I'll...
Yes, happy new year,
see
Lou.
You on Twitter before then anyway, but
yep.
Just the same, we'll look forward to hearing you next year.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hello, Romana.
Oh. Hello, boys.
Got worried there for a second.
Hello, boys.
Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Happy holidays.
Hey, good, thanks. Thank you. It's very rainy, weirdly enough. It rained on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas to us.
Well, at least you didn't have a red sandstorm.
Yes.
Oh,
it could have been
yeah.
worse. It was warm in the morning, but then it rained, and then it was freezing. It was like we had all the extremes. But yes, anyway, the end of time. I thought I was vastly in the minority here, but I'm glad that I'm not. But I like it that there's other people in the I Liked It club. I thought I was getting a little alone, and I had a little bit of a rage online last night, as probably people who have read the forums will see. But I think I'm over it now. I think I was just a little bit hormonal last night. But anyway. I liked seeing Lucy again, and I liked how the Oods essentially refer to Lucy as lost and forgotten, because she really was. After the Wrath of the Time Lords, like, you know, she shoots the master, what happens to her? No one's, it's never said. Everyone just kind of forgets about her. And even in that episode, everyone kind of forgot about her. So I like that she was in it, of course, and I liked how she, first of all, almost in a way, got a bit of redemption because she did a little, she did some bad stuff when she was under the master's influence, and she got one up on him, which was great, but I think I was sad to see her kind of, because I really liked her. It's minor cap, needless to say, it's performance, really. But yeah, the doctor being too late to save her and stop the master, because he's essentially avoiding his death, going on a magical mystery tour around the universe, you know, galaxies, Allison and marrying queens, that he partly, in trying to avoid his death, he's actually caused it in a funny sort of way, because he's too late to stop the master being resurrected, which more or less sets this whole thing whirling, kind of, maybe. It could be debunked next episode. But yeah. And I love Rolf, of course. His description of the dog, he's showing the people, you know, sticky uppy.
You were dropping off a little bit there, your audio.
The last reference.
Is it okay? Talk?
Yeah, we're hearing you now, just that you before your reference to, I think you were saying the wolf had some expression he was using, or?
Oh, he just rang out how he was pretty much describing what he looked like to all the people in the bus, and the way he used the line where his hair's all sticky.
Oh, sticky
uppy,
like, yeah, okay, yeah, that's right, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that amused me, kind of, because, and of course, Minnie the Menace, I have to mention her, lucky mm-hmm. woman.
Yeah.
She was very method in her acting.
I thought of you, in the peach scene, I thought of you.
Yeah, so it's like, I salute you, during it, so I salute you. But yes, of course, the Master. I've been a big fan of the Master ever since Series 3, when I really, really got into Doctor Who. I love Last of the Time Lords. That's my favourite story of all new Doctor Who, so I'm glad to see him back. Loved his new look. I thought Hoodie Master was definitely a very interesting look, where you took him from essentially, you know, all suits and style, and then you take him to being like a hobo, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the blonde hair comes from, but then again, I'm not sure how he came from either. With the, I know Darth is going to get on me.
I originally thought it was Lucy Saxon that had picked the ring up, and he got his hair from her. But obviously, all those prison officers had fair hair, didn't they? Blonde hair.
Is that, maybe that's where hair came from.
I have to mention, as a pure fangirl note, the master strapped to the chair, and all the straight jackets and the collars, and I'm going, what is Russell T. Davies trying to do to us? Is he trying to load our brains? It was just like a kind of big on the internet, like before this came out, where lots of people are like, you know, just kind of going, oh dear, why is the master dressed like this? It's kind of a bit tantalizing, but anyway. But yeah, of course, the master's superpowers, as people have been calling them. I really didn't have that much of a problem with it. I thought him jumping up and down like he was flying was a bit of a stretch, but I liked the laser beams. I just think this was something so and almost ridiculously daft about it that makes it fantastic, that he can shoot laser beams out of his hands. I mean, what's not to love about that? And it's kind of almost like the master, I think this was the commentary, how the RTD was describing the master like being almost like, because Time Lord's dying, it's almost like a dying star, like a supernova, like all the energy is bursting out of him. And every time he uses one of his various powers, he's that one step closer to death, and it's his life force is exploding out of him. So that's what I like to believe with that. So of course, every time the master was eating, I just thought of, I don't know how many people know the internet meme of Om Nom Nom. I just thought of that every time I saw him eating.
For some reason, he was very hungry through the whole thing.
I think it had to do with just the depletion of energy, that he needed the energy constantly because he was depleting it so quickly.
But it was like, very convenient that Joshua Nia Smith had a turkey ready just for him. Already cooked and ready right there.
I bet there are a lot of comments in the people watching saying, he's eating it just like Grandad. There'll be a few family comments going about like that.
More on the Master, but I just love the fact that he's essentially, it's just his pure power and evil in the Master is just really juxtaposed with his personal vulnerability. How he's just, well, what can I say? I just absolutely love the Master in this. I just thought it was such a brilliant performance from the two of them. And, of course, I have to mention, I'm showing Dr. Master Fangirl. I loved the scene with them together in the at night in the Randall. The little line that the Master says, referring back to their childhood, which I thought was absolutely...
The red grass and all
the red grass, yeah, when they're probably, And... Because I like to believe that, you know, the Master and the Doctor, before they became enemies, they were friends.
Right, I think they were. They were.
And,
in their past.
Yeah. As I say, I haven't...
They were colleagues.
I haven't seen much Pertwee, so I don't really know the Master's story. Yeah. Well, I'd like to believe they were very close friends, and then something happened, and then they went their different paths, and there's that kind of love-hate relay between them, which the Master... I mean, not the Master. RTD said in an article somewhere that made me... You know, made my fangirl just melt, where he said that they're tantalizingly close to being soulmates. And it's kind of true. But yeah, I'll leave that there. But yeah, the when the Master essentially, you know, wants the Doctor to listen to him and puts his head against his, all I'll say is I had other thoughts during that scene, but I'll leave it there. Needless to say, I will not tire looking at that screen cap. But yeah, no, it was beautifully played. Just the both of them, especially the bit where the Master runs up to help the collapsing Doctor and then thinks better of it. It's just like you can see there's, you know, they generally like each other, but at the same time they're still enemies. It's an interesting relationship. But of course, the Doctor and Nurse in the cafe scene. Of course, I mentioned that most people mentioned that as a highlight. It was a highlight for me, definitely. Just when the Doctor broke down for that brief second, that was when I almost lost it as well. And seeing Wilson the TARDIS, marvellous, of course, something we've been wanting to see for all of Series 4, and we finally get it, which was lovely. And to wrap up, other than just to say briefly, Donna was nice to see her kind of cameoed in the background. She didn't really have that much of a role. But of course, I'll mention the end, and it's all pretty much my first reaction was, holy Time Lords, Batman. I was like, oh, Time Lords. Interesting. I was completely shocked about seeing them back. I heard a rumor a while ago that the Time Lords were coming back and they were going to be essentially evil. So I guess that rumor was true. I hope the other part of the rumor that I heard is not true, which probably might refer to the woman in white being the Doctor's mom, which was one rumor I heard ages ago. I hope that one doesn't happen. Although if it's played well, I think it will be okay, but that's another story. But yeah, the tunnel's interesting to see. I have a little bit of a, well, I've seen the, you know, we're assuming this guy is president. And as a fan of one of the characters of Big Finish, I'm going, so there's a lot of president. What happened to Romana, Big Finish, the president of Gallifrey?
Well, that was a long time ago.
I'm assuming... that was more though, and I'm assuming that this is after Time War before. I'm not sure. It depends if you've seen the little preview clip. It could be debated. If it is, if she's not mentioned at all, and it's you know, and the timeline isn't really given. I think in my personal canon, I'm thinking Romana got deposed because of the corruption of the Time Lords building, and she as Romana, as a character who had travelled with the Doctor, wouldn't stand for that, and so she chooses to give up the presidency, I think. Which also, I had a funny little theory that she could be the woman that's talking to Wilf as well, Romana regenerated, but I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking that. Again, this is just hard to really judge this one without seeing the next part. I mean, I enjoyed it, but then again, I generally enjoy everything. I was just a little sad to see so much dislike for it, and sometimes I just don't think the fandom know what they want sometimes and never seem to be happy with anything, but I'll save that rant for another time. But yeah, I'll leave it there, really, other than just to say I liked it a lot. There's lots of good bits in it. The whole Master Race thing was a bit silly, I will admit, but it made up for it just to see John Sim in a dress. that was its only saving grace. And to see John Sim in, like, big baggy clothes and, like, big sleeves and, oh, it's adorable. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Well, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there.
Well, thank you, Romana. We're running out of show here, so I'm going to have to say Happy New Year to you, and we're going to have to get to Ian, so... But thank you so much, so,
yep.
And hopefully we'll hear you next week. Cheers.
Yep, hopefully. Cheers.
Last but not least, Mr. Ian. Ian?
Hello, Mr. Trapani.
So, briefly, quickly, come on, we've got a minute left, so let's hear what you have
to
say.
New York just logged in as well, so if you want to go to New York instead of me, you may do so.
We're running right out of time here, so if that's Ken, I'm not sure.
Ken, is it?
Yes, why don't you go to Ken instead?
Is that you, Ken?
Yeah.
Okay, quickly, you're in a minute, your synapse of...
I just stepped all over Dos Skeptical, didn't I?
No, that was Ian.
That was me.
Oh, sorry, Ian. Sorry.
Be light confusion.
I'll give it three. I'll give it three TARDIS groans.
Okay.
No quibbles.
Sure.
Okay.
No quibbles.
I did enjoy the cliffhanger as wacky as it was, and I thought the episode needed more of the one-on-one between David Tennant and John Sim than it needed, like, the X-Men jumping around and lightning bit.
Yeah, we had some problems with that whole superpowers.
You know, I know I'm really old-fashioned by saying this, but I liked the John Pertwee and the John Pertwee Roddy Delgado sword fight in Sea Devils more than I liked the jumping around, 100 feet in the air.
I would agree, yeah. But, then again, it's no longer the John Pertwee Doctor either, but I...
I get it that the show moves on and we're moving past this, but I think I may have said this on the Waters of Mars one. As much as I've defended Russell for the last 5 years, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Stephen Moffat's going to bring to the table. I think he's pulled out all the tricks he can possibly pull, and... it's time for everybody to tip their cap, and we say thank you, and they say adios, and we move to the next doctor, the next producer, the next group of writers, and we move into a new era. And with the genius of Doctor Who over the many, many years is that just when it was getting old, it gets new again.
Yeah, well, I think it's at that time now, so I think a lot of people are feeling that way.
But I'll stop my review there just so that Ian has a second to give his review as well. I didn't mean to Shanghai everybody.
No, we were just wrapping up the show.
Shanghai.
We're over 2 hours now. That's why I'm...
Yeah, Lewis is coming to the end of his song.
Yeah, my song is ending. So anyway, Ian is no longer online. So, I mean, he's online. He's no longer on audio. So.
Oh, I see. Sorry, Ian. I didn't mean to...
You can listen to what he has to say on the Cult and Collective podcast.
That's very true. I can.
Well, hopefully Ian will return next week. We'll be back here next week doing the same thing, giving our full review of The End of Time, which will be The End of Time Part 2.
Same bat time, same...
Yes.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Same bat time, same bat channel. So until then, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll be back then. And that's where our live show ended, but wait, there's more. I was sorry there to abbreviate Ken's input there, but we were at the very end of our live show. In fact, we were over an hour in overtime there. We were twice as long as we had scheduled to be, and everyone had a lot to say, and this is the reason why we had to split this show in two right here. But it was great that Ken had a opportunity to call in and give his two cents, if you will, or with inflation, $2, if you will, of... his thoughts on The End of Time Part 1. We did get some feedback sent not live, obviously, because it would have been on the show, on our live show, but sent to us via email or the public call box. And since we have this opportunity now with this part two of our review, we can go over some of that feedback now. Now, we got a piece of email from a longtime listener of Doctor Who Podshock, Philip, or Dr. Phil. He really is a doctor. He writes, "Sorry, I can't be there for the live chat, but I wanted to email a few brief thoughts. Master's Resurrection and Botch After Effects, Superpowers, in parentheses, lame. Immortality Gate, Naya Smith's motivations, completely empty and therefore lame. Everything Bernard Cribbins / Wilf, most excellent. Doctor and Wilf and Cafe, dramatically poignant and filled with complicated emotions. Quote, who are you? Eating homeless people, forced lightning battle, waste of special effects and budget. Helicopter scene, inspired money-saving effect. Making everyone into the, quote, master race, end quote, inspired and hilarious. The Time Lords. After seeing Part 2's post-credits sequence posted by the BBC, I think it looks like we have a Robert Holmes corrupt Renaissance Italy-style Time Lords. Curious that Davies comments on them being the villains. I hope Russell T. Davies didn't resurrect them to wipe them out again." Yeah, me too. "Time Lords using a big reset button / Ren and Stimpy history eraser button, likely to restore the human population. Timothy Dalton looks ruthless. And I wonder, now that we have Time Ladies, why post-Gallifrey Collegiate Society is still male-dominated?" Quoting Russell T. from the different BBC America documentaries. "Is the older female seen by Wilf on the television a future Romana or Time Lady of import? We'll have to wait and see. Interesting that the drumbeat 1, 2, 3, 4 is the heartbeat of a Time Lord. Have fun with the reviews today, guys. Belated Merry Christmas to Podshock. Philip, quote, Dr. Phil." Well, thank you, Philip, for that email, and we were able to include it in this episode, which is, as I said before, is a rare thing, because usually when we do live shows, we barely have time just to include the people that are calling in live, so we really don't have time to do any other sort of feedback during our live shows. Now, that was email. We also have the Podshock public call box, which you can call at any time and leave your feedback there. It's a voicemail system, so all you need to do is to call the Podshock public call boxes to use any sort of telephone, be it land phone or mobile phone or some sort of internet phone, whatever it may be. If you can dial a phone number with it and works on Earth, you can use it. Call 206-600-6517 for the Podshock public call box. Alternatively, you can email us your audio feedback. You can record it on an MP3 file or another audio format and send it to feedback@podshock.net. Many smartphones will do that as well, such as the Apple iPhone. You can record a voice memo on that and then send it to us via our feedback address at feedback@podshock.net. For some reason, we received multiple feedbacks from multiple people. It seems that the End of Time Part 1 elicited not only an initial feedback reaction, but then after some time to think about it, they sent another piece of feedback. So starting it off is a caller to the Podshock public call box. Unfortunately, she did not leave her name, so I can't introduce you to her, but this is her message.
"Hey, guys. Happy holidays. I watched the End of Time Part 1 last night on BBC America, and I have to say that I'm really enjoying seeing the Master in the Roger Delgado form, because after watching last night, I went back and watched a lot of my old John Pertwee episodes, and I'm really liking classic Doctor Who, not liking the new Master quite so much. Bye."
Yeah, well, this was brought up in the live show as well, and I think Ken had expressed that opinion as well, and I had said something earlier in the show in part one of this two-part live show. So if you go back to Podshock 175, I had mentioned the same thing, that I sort of missed the Roger Delgado style of Master. And maybe we might see that in a future regeneration, or if this particular master changes, maybe in the future, you never know. But it's not the same doctor either, and so therefore, it's not the same master either. Now, instead of me fumbling over reading out emails, I'm going to hand it over to my version of Chameleon, the Mac here. It's going to speak out some email to you, so take it away, Mac.
Must I? You know that I am very good at reading text out loud, but I am still not perfect. There are some Doctor Who terms and names I get wrong. Such as TARDIS, I say the acronym as T-A-R-D-I-S. There is the Doctor's Time Lady Companion, Romana 1 and Romana 2, which I pronounce Romana. I also say Gallifrey instead of Gallifrey. Okay, I will read the emails. But remember, listeners, you can record your feedback in audio and send it in to us or use the PodShock public call box by calling 206-600-6517 using your phone and leave your message there on the voicemail system. Remember, it is a U.S. area code phone number. This way you won't have to listen to my voice reading emails.
All right, well, be that as it may, let's read off the first one, which is from Kevin Dalton.
Dear PodShock, my name is Kevin Dalton and I am a huge Doctor Who fan as well as a PodShock fan. I was just now listening to part one of your review of End of Time, part one, and everyone seems very confused about the almost magical powers the Master possesses in the episode. I, on no account, claim to be an expert on anything Doctor Who, being only 16 myself and having only experienced the new series with small bits of classic episodes, but I may be able to clear some things up. I listened to the BBC Doctor Who commentary podcast and have gathered this information from the Roots Themselves, Russell T. Davies and Julie Gardner. In the commentary, Julie states that the Master is half built, and Russell says that he is ripped open. They go on to talk about how Time Lord's death is different than a human's in such due to the massive amounts of energy in the Time Lord's body. They are never too direct, but Russell says that their death is like a star burning out. Like a supernova, like a black hole, cause every cell in him dies. The most revealing statement to me is, it's because he's been ripped open and that went wrong, that this energy is a sign that he's dying. What I think that they failed to mention in detail, but that is rather supposed to be implied, goodness knows how anyone would draw the right conclusion with the episode alone, that as the Master is being resurrected, Lucy Saxon stops the completion and thus leaves a sort of half-finished Master leaking all of this energy. This is what I got out of the commentary. On another note, I am not sure how I feel about the episode until I see part 2. Honestly, I was not 100% impressed and hope part 2 will redeem this, so I cannot really rate it, although if I were forced to, I would sadly give it 2.5 TARDIS groans. I hope I helped and I wish you all a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, as well as a very Merry Regeneration. Sincerely, Kevin Dalton.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin, and I know Tim had mentioned the same thing. Tim Drury on our live show had mentioned recommending everyone listening to the commentary, and I usually do. I'll do. I still haven't listened to the commentary here, but I think what both Dave and myself say is that the story itself, the episode that was televised without the commentary, should be able to tell you exactly what's going on. You shouldn't have to be forced, if you will, or maybe forced isn't the right word to use, but you shouldn't have to listen to the commentary in order to discern what's going on. The story, as it's televised, should tell you what's going on, and it should be more self-explanatory. Yeah, we can sort of work it out if you struggle with it a bit and work out, well, gee, one scene, the Master is coming into existence again with magic potions and whatnot, and now, and then the next scene, the prison is destroyed and Lucy's nowhere to be seen and none of the others are. Someone said in the live show there was you could see one figure escaping. I didn't see that. I have to watch it again. The next time you see the Master, all of a sudden he's blonde and he has these magical powers and you don't know what's going on, and it's not really fully explained that this was the cause of his I don't want to say regeneration, but for lack of a better word, his coming back into existence. Where is all this power coming from? I mean, he died, and I don't know, whatever, the magic, whatever, magic potions again. So whatever it is, it's I guess he got reconstituted as a Time Lord again, and he has all that Time Lord energy, I guess, and that's what it's all about. But it's not very clear in watching part one, I'm sorry to say. It's I mean, we've seen the power of the regenerations before with the Ninth Doctor turning into the Tenth Doctor and the Half Doctor regeneration that we saw somewhere, when was it, 2008, I think it was, or whenever it was. So yeah, obviously there's some sort of tremendous energy that goes on with the regeneration. And as Darth Skeptical had said, it goes back to even the 1996 movie where after the Doctor regenerates from the 7th to the 8th, he has some extraordinary power that the Doctor normally doesn't have. But again, this isn't really spelled out or really isn't really represented that clearly in Episode 1. You know, you shouldn't have to listen to the commentary or even watch Doctor Who Confidential to get the information to fill in the holes. The holes should be already filled in the episode itself. So let's go back to the Podshock public call box, where once again that same caller calls back and leaves another message.
Hey guys, I saw The End of Time Part 1 and I had some feelings about it, mostly negative, I have to admit. But after thinking on it, sleeping over it, I don't like the way the Doctor is ending. When the Doctor's died before, I'm thinking Peter Davison, Tom Baker especially, he died heroically. He knew he was going to die. He faced it. He took it well. I don't feel that David Tennant is taking this well. I just don't like the way that it's going. And I had other problems with the whole episode. I like the normal parts of it. I like them sitting in the cafe. I like seeing Donna again, just being Donna, not doing anything particular. All the other things about the Master, especially the Master, and the Doctor with the Master, and just about everything else about the episode that wasn't normal, I really did not like at all. I cannot wait to see this end. Bye.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And it will soon come to an end in a matter of days. So you don't have long to wait, thankfully. Anyway, let's go to Kevin again. Kevin Dalton writes again. Take it away, Mac.
Dear Podshock, this is Kevin Dalton again. I send you a little explanation of the Master's extremely strange behavior not too long ago, and now wish to send a review of the whole episode. So, End of Time, where to start? Well, how about the Master? This episode, I felt, wasn't so much the story of the Doctor, but showed us a much more intimate vision of the Master than ever before. Well, at least in the new series, I'm not as fluent in the classics. I quite liked the Master in this episode, as it revealed things like the truth about the never-ending drumbeat inside his head. I had not really thought much about it in Utopia Sound of Drums Last of the Time Lords, and had just thought that the Master had these war drums inside his head because the Time Lords resurrected him only to wedgie the Time War. I did like how the Doctor realized that it was not just a sound of insanity, but something that actually frightened the Doctor. Anyway, the Master was a bit too much at points with his almost magical powers, but I still sort of liked it. As for the powers themselves, Harry Potter. Way too much Harry Potter. I mean potions and anti-potions. Come on. I think all of the science was completely drained from the science fiction in the first 10 minuets that I was thinking, for the first time ever in Doctor Who, that this was absolutely nuts. I really do hope that this is all going to be fixed up in part 2. Anyways, I'll move away from the Master for now and go on to some other little bits I would have liked fixed in part 1. The whole immortality gate thing was a little random, even by Doctor Who standards. Nothing was really explained in detail. The staff working on it was given only a short explanation before being turned into the Master race, and the green guys, the Vinvoxy, I quite liked the Voyage reference. I seem to be one of the very, very few to actually like Voyage of the Damned and hope the Vinvoxy will play a role in part 2. But again, they seemed very random. I am not sure I liked the Master Race thing at all, but I am putting my faith in part 2 for redemption. Now on to stuff I liked. I for one loved the music. Hats off to the amazing Murray Gold. The only thing I found a little weird was the first scene. I only noticed it the second time I watched it. All that happens is Wilf looking at some stained glass with the TRDIS in it, and I think the music there was a bit too much. But I thought the rest was absolutely spectacular. The little thinned out Gallifrey theme, Gallifrey is still my all-time favorite musical cue in Doctor Who, and I am excited to hear more of it with the return of the Time Lords. The climax music, did they release a preview at one time because it sounded really really familiar, and everything in between was, in my personal opinion, the best score of an episode yet. Something else I liked was the little references to other stuff in the series. The Vinvoxy again a reference to Banna Cephalotta in Voyage, Wilf mentioning Netty who was a major character in the novel Beautiful Chaos. I am a huge fan of the new novels, and, in retrospect, the Trickster mentioning the gate and the wedding of Sarah Jane. All in all, to finally wrap up, I give it a 2.5 out of 5 for probably failing to meet my very high expectations of a final adventure for my favorite Doctor, in high hopes that my rating will rise with Part 2 on 2 January in America. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Regeneration, Pod Shock.
Thank you once again, Kevin. So we had two double dippers. No, it's all good. Thank you so much, Kevin. Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't realize. I guess I have to rewatch that Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith once again because I didn't realize the Trickster mentioned the Immortality Gate in that episode. And since I'm not really up on the novels, I didn't really realize there was a reference to a character in the novel, in one of the novels. So all good stuff. Thank you so much for sharing some insight, both Kevin and Dr. Phil, as well as the caller on our Podshock public call box. And we always welcome your feedback. The other thing we also always welcome is your support. And you can support Doctor Who Podshock by becoming a Podshock supporting subscriber. Earlier this month, we released the 10 Doctors special, Part 1. And we're going to be releasing Part 2 very soon. So if you're already a Podshock supporting subscriber, you have already received Part 1. And Part 2 will be coming shortly. So get on board and get some extra content while supporting this podcast and making this episode that you listen to right now possible. We thank you all for listening, and we thank you all Podshock supporting subscribers for making this episode possible. Only for a simple, small monthly supporting subscriber fee each month, which you can cancel at any time, will make you feel better knowing that you're supporting a show you love and help to ensure that we can continue and grow. To find out more information and to become a Podshock supporting subscriber, go to thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will get you to the same place. And click on the banner to become a Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscriber. In our last episode, Doctor Who Podshock 175, we played a Christmas greeting that was sent to us by the WhoCast. We also got another greeting that was put up on our website via Dave Cooper from the Cultum Collective, another holiday greeting that they had sent to Doctor Who Podshock and the Gallifreyan Embassy, and we thank them for that. And since Ian did get cut off in our live show, at least you can hear a little bit more of Ian now.
Hi, this is Ian, the Sixth Doctor.
Hi, this is Dave AC.
From the Cultum Collective podcast.
Yes, we collectively like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from all our podcasters and listeners to your podcasters and your listeners.
Well, hang on, Dave. You're telling me there's other podcasts? Next you'll be telling me there's no Santa Claus.
Oh, come on. I know you secretly listen to these other ones. I know I do.
I know, but none of them have wine.
Ooh, wine. Lovely. Time for another glass.
Yep. Cheers, Dave.
Cheers, Ian.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
And a Happy New Year.
Ah, Very nice. Thank you both Dave and Ian from the Cultum Collective. You can find their podcast on iTunes. They do a live show every week on TalkShoe, just like this live show is done. And you can find them on their website as well, which is cultum.com. And both of them are good blokes. They're both actually Doctor Who Podshock correspondents and regular contributors to the show. Dave has been here with us since the beginning, really, and we appreciate both of them and their continued input to our show, as well as their fine show that they do. Now, as far as their podcast being the only one with wine, well, I'm sure Gary Vaynerchuk will have his say about that, and also Grape Radio might have a say about that as well. Hey, and even Doctor Who Podshock did a special edition of Doctor Who Podshock After Dark with some spirits on the table and elsewhere as well. Not exactly wine, I don't think. Could have been some wine involved. We still have to get that episode out to you. That's one for Podshock supporting subscribers. Now, we'll be doing this all again. We'll be doing another live show with your live feedback, reviewing The End of Time Part 2. And in that, we can hopefully review the whole entire story of The End of Time. But get in on the show early so you can get in the queue. And maybe this time we'll try to get some new people in the queue that we haven't heard from before. So if you have not done one of our live shows, please take this opportunity to join us this Sunday, January 3rd at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. We'll both bring you to the same place, and you can find out information on how to join us on our live show. And while you're there at gallifreyanembassy.org, be sure to check out our website. We have news and information and forums. Everything relating to Doctor Who is covered in some form or another there. There's photo galleries, polls, our forums, which are very active with your input, as well as our online store and more information about the Gallifreyan Embassy and Doctor Who Podshock. You can also check out the tweets that we're sending out. And to that point, you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow Dave Cooper at twitter.com/DaveAC. You can follow James at twitter.com/JamesNorton. You can even follow Ken at twitter.com/KenDeep. And of course, I'm at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. And also, don't forget, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter, not just for information and news about the podcast, but we tweet information on all Doctor Who news. It's twitter.com/Podshock. So until next time, thanks for listening, and a very happy new year. We'll see you in 2010 when we review The End of Time Part 2. So catch you then. On behalf of Dave, James, Ken, myself, and everyone connected to Doctor Who Podshock, Happy New Year! Cheers, everyone! You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Doctor Who Podshock!
Who are you?
I'm Wilfred Mott.
No, but people have waited hundreds of years to find me, and then you manage it in a couple of hours.
Well, I'm just lucky, I suppose.
No, we keep on meeting, Wilf, over and over again, like something's still connecting us.
Well, what's so important about me?
Exactly. Why you?